let's talk about this new citizenship test. The government says that they want to level up the requirements from the current band 5 to band 6 of the test called the IELTS, which stands for International English Language Testing System. Now, for anyone who's had to study English as a second language, including our producer here, Yusuke, who you hear of a lot, and he is Japanese, and he knows this IELTS is actually, I think, makes him shudder in some ways. The acronym is a constant refrain, and he says it's a testing regime you get exposed to very regularly. But is it actually what new migrants and would-be migrants need? What's the difference between Band 5 and Band 6? So Helen Moore joins us. She's a retired associate professor at the School of Education of New South Wales and the former vice president of the Australian Council of TESOL. As such, she's one of the pioneers in this country to devise programs for non-English speakers. And TESOL stands for Teaching English to Speakers of Other Languages. And Helen joins us now. Hello, Helen. Thank you.
Hello, Wendy. Well done with all the acronyms.
Oh. There's a lot of them, exactly. Now, I've got a few audio clues here, Helen, about the difference between the bands 5, 6 and 7 in the oral test. And they might give us a bit of a clue here. Can you tell us at what stage these oral tests would be taken?
Well, that's the point. There's horses for courses here. So that test that you're talking about and that the minister was using as a reference point is a test for university entry. It is a test for getting a student visa to come into this country. Mm-hmm. So if you are overseas and you apply for a student visa, the test you have to, well, it's one of a number of tests. There's a couple of others you could sit as well. But it's a test that tries to test where people sit in relation to getting in to study something. And it's totally inappropriate to test for citizenship. So that's the first point. And I've forgotten the rest of your question.
All right, well, this is part of an oral test. It might give people a bit of a clue as to the difference in competency in an oral sense anyway. Okay, that's,
right.
So this is for band 5.
My interest or hobby that I enjoy is shopping and picnic to spend time with my family or friends. Or especially I want to do volunteers for shopping. I think when I feel stressed out, I can shop.
So you can hear there that there's the gal talking about the wanting to go shopping and having picnics with their friends. This is an oral test in band 6.
Those actors, especially the movie actors and the sports stars, they are really famous now in China because they can be seen by the people every day during the movie on the advertisements. They can be seen.
Yeah, so there we go. We get quite competent there. And here we have an example of a band 7 student.
Mostly sports people, I would say. Like, our favorite sport is soccer. So, yeah, people who play the sport. And famous as well are politicians, but they are not admired or they're not alive or anything.
Well, there we go. So there's three oral tests. Helen, and at what point would people be at, how long would they have studied, I guess, well, it's hard to say, I suppose, depending on their competency, but when people are studying, though, do they take those oral tests on a regular basis?
Well, this is the point. I mean, first of all, those samples that you've got are taken under test conditions, so...
Yes.
You sit that test, you sit in a little booth and you have to speak to the wall, which is a very weird way of testing someone. And it's fair enough if you want to test for whether people are good enough to get into university or not. But the first issue is that you have to have a certain level of skill, and you have to be prepared in a certain way to be able to manage that test and not simply freeze in front of the microphone.
Okay.
So it's a very weird situation, and testing oral English like that, being able to pass a test like that itself is an acquired skill. The second thing is that that person at level 8, or whatever it was, the test that they're talking about is across all four skills. So it's listening, reading, writing, and speaking. And so that person at level 7 or whatever in speaking may be at level 2 or level 3 in reading and writing. The thing I think about with all of this is my mother was in a nursing home for 6 years, a very good nursing home, and I'm a reasonably expert in this area. So I would say about two-thirds of the nurses, the nursing staff, I don't mean the RNs, I mean all the nursing staff in that place, were from non-English speaking backgrounds.
Yeah.
Their oral English was very fluent, but I would hazard a guess that their writing would never be able to pass at level 6. Can I give you an example of level 6 on that test? So the reading test, I'll just read out what it says. You have 60 minutes to read at least 4 texts taken from magazines, newspapers or training manuals and answer 40 comprehension questions. Your short answer responses are also assessed for grammar and spelling. Here's an excerpt from a piece about bee behaviour. The direct, and here's the piece. So they have to read this and then they have to answer 40 questions.
Right.
The direction of the sun is represented by the top of the hive wall. If she runs straight up, this means that the feeding place is in the same direction as the sun. However, if, for example, the feeding place is 40 degrees to the left of the sun, then the dancer would run 40 degrees to the left of the vertical line. Now, I would bet that most people would have trouble doing that test cold.
Yeah.
And the writing test, here's the writing test, a piece of writing that isn't at level 6. They had to write a letter of complaint about their roommate. Dear sir and madam, I'm writing to express my dissatisfaction with my roommate. As you know, we share one room. I cannot study in the room at all anymore if I still stay here. That's not level 6. That failed at level 6.
So we're talking about
excluding huge numbers of people who are making fantastic contributions to this country. The farmers market that I go to on Saturday mornings, I'd say two-thirds of those people are non-English speaking background, and I'd bet you any money you like, not one of them would pass the reading or the writing test.
Well, I have a text here, in fact, Helen, saying I've seen the test. The average Aussie Joe would be struggle to pass all for 4 band 7 levels.
Well, precisely.
And so let's get back to basics here now. What have we got now, and why is the government saying it's inadequate?
What we've got now is a test that came out of the Howard government's attempt to do exactly the same thing. So the Howard government also got going on, let's have an English test, and let's have a test. You might remember people complaining about, you know, I don't know the exact question, but, you know, what was the test that Don Matt Bradman made X number of runs in or whatever. So that was modified and is now a pretty reasonable sort of a test. It asks things like, how does Australia govern with two houses of parliament? Which, by the way, I've got a niece who was in year 11, I think, when I brought her to when she came down to Canberra, and she didn't know that there were two houses of parliament in Canberra. But to pass the citizenship test at the moment, you have to do that. Now, it's a test of things that you need to know to be a basic kind of a citizen in this place. And in order to do that test, you need to be able to understand English.
Right.
You don't need to have to, as I understand it, somebody was just telling me the other day about an African refugee friend of hers who had just passed that test and she couldn't, she wasn't good enough to read or write, so it was given to her orally. And my friend said that when she found, this woman had found out she'd passed the test, my friend is quite tall and quite big, and this woman was so overjoyed with passing the citizenship test, she fell into her arms and pretty well knocked her down. So that's the kind of person who wants to be a citizen, but whose reading and writing skills are very low, maybe non-existent.
And so all this equates, as I understand it, to a band 5. And now the government is looking at increasing it to a band 6. And you,
I don't know where that's come from, Wendy.
Yeah, this is what they're saying in the Australian. But this is
I think that's probably Australian rubbish, to be honest.
The tests are tests for courses.
Nobody gets. The only thing I can think of is to get a student visa at the moment, you need, so that's to get a student visa to study in this country, you need 5.5 and you can walk in the door. If you enrol for a 10-week English course, you can get in on band 5. Mm-hmm. If you enrol for a 20-week English course, you can get in at 4.5. So on the IELTS test, so maybe that's where the Australians got it from, I really don't know. As far as, there is no English test as such,
sure.
I believe there should not be one at the moment, but there's a de facto one because you have to understand English to pass the current citizenship test.
So do you agree, Helen, with the general thrust, though, of what we're hearing? That the exam should be in the competency level should be increased.
I don't agree at all. I think there's plenty of people. There's loads of people in this country who've got a contribution to make, whose English is absolutely minimal. But they've got children, and they look after their children. There are African women who, have got 5 or 6 children, and they're doing their best to get those kids to school and get them fed and looked after and loved and cared for, and they want to be Australian citizens. And I don't see there's any reason to exclude those people and to have those kids brought up in a home where their parents are Australian citizens, although their English is not crash hot.
Okay. Well, I'm speaking with Helen Moore this morning. She's a retired associate professor at the School of Education of University of New South Wales and knows a lot about this stuff. Madeline has joined us. Hi, Madeline.
Good morning, Wendy. Good morning.
And where did your folks come from?
Well, my original name is Magda, and we came from Hungary. We left after the revolution in 1956. And I had my 10th birthday on the ship on the way to Australia. And when we got here, I had 4 words of English, and they were yes, no, shut up, and Coca-Cola. I've learned a word or two since. But the point I want to make is that my late parents contributed, and my aunts and uncles contributed to this society, and my late mum never actually learned to speak English properly. She could make herself understood for shopping. I'm quite emotional about it. For shopping, etc. But she never acquired, Sydney Morning Herald level of English or anything like that. But she contributed. She was a machinist, and she did her job really well without the English. I think it's a lot of people can make contributions without having university-level English.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that. Yes?
Wendy, there's another really important point, and that is who's going to pay for all of this?
Yeah.
And when the Howard government got going on an English test before, they abandoned it. To develop a test, a good test, is very expensive. And then you have to maintain it. You can't just have one version of it. You've got to keep making new items, otherwise somebody will get hold of it and sell it to the next person. Then you've got to administer it. Then you've got to mark it. You've got to do all this thing properly. It's hugely expensive.
Yeah.
So if the government's not going to do it, are they going to make prospective citizens pay for it? And the current test rates at the moment, it costs you $330 at the moment to sit the IELTS test. Mm-hmm. every sitting. So if you fail, you pay another $3.30. And to sit a test that's actually more appropriate, which I hate to give you another abbreviation, the ISLPR, the International Second Language Proficiency Rating Scale, to sit that costs $400.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, then let's take one last call here. This is Jackie. Hi, Jackie.
Hello. Some people have difficulty learning another language, and I am one of those people. When I went to live in Ireland, I had to get Irish to teach mainstream kids. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
It was just not me and my ears and, oh, God. So I taught disabled kids in church. So when we came to Australia, I was working with autistic kids and stuff like that, and I loved it. But my parents, who just arrived in Australia, if they got a disabled child, the mother couldn't get out for classes. I can remember it happening in Sydney.
All right. Well, I can imagine. Thank you for that, Jackie. Yes, I can imagine, Helen. Is that true? There are some people who this is just it's an impossibility for them.
This, look, 80% of the refugee intake go into the Adult Migrant English Program. To get into that program, you have to be below functional English. That means you can't catch the bus or go to the supermarket. When you get to functional English, so-called, this is on the ISLPR, then you are no longer eligible for the AMEP. That means you're no longer eligible for free English classes. So at 80% of humanitarian entrants go into the AMEP. So roughly speaking, let's say 60% of them, you know, or let's say half of them get to functional English. The other half, we're talking about something like, well, I don't know, but somewhere between 40 and 80% of all refugees coming into this country at the moment cannot pass that test.
Okay, yeah, but it does put a lot of people... Well, there'll be a lot of stress, I imagine, too, associated with all that. Yeah, yeah.
Sure, if you just look around the Sydney fish market and ask yourself, are these people doing a good job? Are they making a contribution? They're bringing in tourist dollars, et cetera, et cetera. Would they pass that test? No.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning, Helen.
You're welcome.
Very straight talker, isn't she? She's good value. Helen Moore, she is the retired associate professor at the School of Education at the University of New South Wales. She's a former vice president of the Australian Council of TESOL Associations, and that's Teaching English to Speakers of Other Language, TESOL.